Hello everyone and welcome to another recap race analysis here on the Cycling Dane Extra channel, or if you're listening on the Cycling Dane podcast. As always, I'm joined by Patrick Blake of Audu Cycling and one third of the Echelon Cycling podcast, and today we're looking at Liège-Bastogne-Liège, the fourth monument of the year, or fifth if you can't count Strade Bianche. We'll get Patrick too triggered on that. But anyways, Patrick, what happened in this year's edition?
Well, Doyen set off on a rather cold-ish morning in Liège, and we saw a break of eight riders or so. I can't really remember who was in there, but I remember Remy Rojas was in there. He was very animating today. But the main thing that happened, you know, in the race was that there was a crash with about, I want to say it's about 90 kilometers to go, 100 kilometers to go. And although nobody massively significant came down in the crash, it was the people who got stuck behind it. That was the main thing, including, namely, Mathieu van der Poel was behind this crash, whereas Tadej Pogačar and a lot of the other favourites were up in the front, and they didn't necessarily, well, slow down. You know, it's not, you don't have to do that in cycling at all, but it meant that there was an awfully long chase with van der Poel trying to get back on. Hidcock was caught behind, he needed a bike change as well. A lot of the Group Harbour FDJ boys were behind, barring Victorious was stuck behind as well. So there's quite a lot of interest in trying to bring this back, but the gap was somewhere, it was nearing like a minute or so. Pidcock decided to attack across. I think he took Romain Grégoire with him as well. And you saw those guys rolling turns, and they did make it back on. But it turned out that eventually Van der Poel's group made it back on as well. So you could say maybe Pidcock's move was a bit futile, but eventually things all came back together as we were coming into Lavradut, which is pretty much where everybody was expecting Tadej Pogačar to attack and not be seen again. And well, he didn't disappoint, let's put it that way. He just lit it up. Domen Novák, who was probably the man of the match today, he was incredible. I think he was did about 70% of UAE Team Emirates work today. He moved to the front, Healy followed him, then it was Pogačar, Skelmos and Richard Carapaz were up there as well. But then Pogačar just launched off the front once Novák was done, and Carapaz, credit to him, he did follow Pogačar. He was a bit like Pidcock from last year. He did try, but unfortunately, he was just slowly gapped off the wheel towards the top of Lavradut. Then it kind of went downhill, and Pogačar got a tailwind, and pretty much that was all she wrote. But there was a lot of interest still in Group 2. Van der Poel was slightly dropped on Lavradut. A second group formed, but it was far too big. Another group splintered off the front of that with Ben Healy, Grégoire, Cousnefroy, and Romain Bardet, who stayed off the front until the North Shore Faucon, where Healy obviously tried to keep a group away. I think it perhaps committed a bit too much to it, but that ended up meaning that both Bardet managed to just silently and stealthily sneak off the front of that group, and none of the other riders in that group of four could stay with him. And you saw some counterattacks coming behind from Bardet and Lutsenko, who were obviously all looking in fantastic form ahead of Tour Romandy next week. And eventually, all that group came back together. Van der Poel's still in a third group at that point, I guess you could say. So you've got Pogačar, then Bardet, then you've got a chasing group, and then you've got Van der Poel's group. But eventually, Van der Poel's group came back, which meant that he was in contention for a podium place in this race. But ahead of all this, Tadej Pogačar's got a two-minute lead. He's rolling across the line. He's pointing up to the sky. Obviously, he's had a pretty rough last two editions of Liège-Bastogne-Liège, so He did really good. And of course, Pogačar, he took the win today. There were quite a lot of moves behind trying to take for third place, but that eventually all rolled over the line in one big group. So the top 10 is that Tadej Pogačar takes his second victory at Liège-Bastogne-Liège, followed by Romain Bardet, who backed up a very good week at the Tour of the Alps with the second place, by Mathieu van der Poel, proving that whatever Wout van Aert can do, Mathieu van der Poel can do as well by getting a third place, followed by Van Hills, Aurelien Paly-Pensler, Mari van Zevenot, Valentin Madouas, Alexei Lutsenko, Peo Bilbao, and Tom Pidcock, despite all the effort he put in today, did manage to round out the top 10. I want to say it was surprising, Pogačar's victory, but it wasn't really. I think we were all sort of expecting this was going to happen, and he didn't disappoint.
Mathieu Skelmose-Jensen literally said this was how he was going to win it the day before, and then he won it.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? Like he Skelmose was talking a big game, but Skelmose wasn't really there today. He did put himself in very good positions, but yeah, I mean, Maybe he should be doing all the predicting, should Skelmos. He's obviously pretty good at it. He just basically said what Pogacar was going to do.
I mean, yeah, we have to start with Tadej Pogacar. Obviously, an incredible year already. Star Bianchi, Vuelta a Catalunya, now this. He's just unstoppable right now. This form is absolutely ferocious, to say the least. And do you think UAE... Okay, we'll get into the other side because I have a lot to say about all the other teams. But in terms of this, UAE played it perfectly, a bit like Alpecin in the Cobblestone Classics here.
Yeah, I think they did a perfect job. When that crash happened and Van der Poel was behind, they didn't... I don't think they increased the pace. It wasn't like an unsporting move. It was just... They just kept a good tempo where Van der Poel and Pidcock came back, but obviously they'd had to expend a lot of energy to get back to that front group. And I think that Pogacar just pretty much had an armchair ride today. UAE just took it easy between the climbs and then seemed to just go kind of like 90% up every single one of the climbs. So just eventually just wearing everyone down just piece by piece until the point where Lavradut, the main sort of hammer of the day where you can cause the most damage. I mean, Pogacar, I mean, yeah, he just has a tendency of almost telegraphing to everyone where he's going to attack. And just doing it, and nobody can seem to follow it. It's just he's on a completely different level to everybody else.
I was like, make him the attack, because I didn't think it was like a full like bang. It was like a bit of a bang, and then like a really high tempo, and then it was like, you know, quite interesting attack.
Yeah, it was. He kind of just, yeah, like you say, he was out of the saddle, and he was just in the saddle, just like tapping away, just like pitter patter, pitter patter. And then, like, Carapaz is swinging the bike left to right, and everyone in the group behind is just grimacing and having an awful time. And Pogacar's just in the saddle, just twiddling away at this gear, just seemingly just floating up the climb. Like you say, it wasn't a ferocious attack, it was just efficient.
I mean, the other teams, I was almost, like, banging my head against, like, the table, because if you know this is what he's going to do, why do you not try and be more aggressive? Send riders up the road, force UAE to chase more. It's just, I was completely dumbfounded by this.
I think UAE just had such a stranglehold where even if you sent somebody up the road, I think it wouldn't really have made a difference. It's like they were working on the front all the time.
Nobody tried.
Yeah, but it was just futile because it would have just ended up in you getting caught anyway.
So next time we'll just give the medal or give the trophy to Tadej Pogacar, and then everyone races and
may as well
second place.
You may as well give him a Maya Rosa right now.
Yeah, exactly.
It's unbelievably predictable. I understand that people don't, or there's like very conflicting camps at the moment where some people really are fine with this dominance. Some people really aren't happy with the dominance and are saying, oh, you know, wherever you're supposed to enjoy this sort of dominance and stuff. But at the end of the day, Pogacar's just, he was just better than everybody else today. You can't deny it. And he deserved to get the victory.
My pick, obviously, Mathieu van der Poel, I wanted him to win. It seems like every time we talk about in the preview, all these accolades that could be bestowed on him as he's the world champion, blah, blah, blah. Doesn't happen when I say it. But yeah, like you said, third place, as you said as well. Whatever Wout can do, apparently he at least can do, because he was third as well back in 2022, I think. Yeah, Mathieu, a good comeback by him, though, to get that third place. And it's another monument podium for him, so you can't be too unhappy about that, I think.
Michael Matthews did exactly today what I thought Michael Matthews would do, which is just that sort of... He wasn't really ever, like, attacking off the front. He
you
just did...
Van der Poel.
Yeah. Van der Poel just did exactly...
You said Michael Matthews.
Oh, well, he did what Michael Matthews should have done today, which is just what I expected him to do, which is just he rides just at a level, things come back together, and he wins, you know, the sprint for third place, his group. He was never attacking off the front. He didn't panic when that crash happened. He just rode a very methodical and calculated race, which always seems a bit odd. Van der Poel, he always seems like quite this eccentric, quite, you know, gravitas attacking rider, but I think he actually rode a very smart and calculated race, and I think third place, I think that's pretty good, to be honest with you. I think if things were different, maybe he could have got second. If Bardet wasn't away. So I think third place is still a very good result for Van der Poel to be getting. It's his best result on the edge. That's definitely worth mentioning.
I mean, what do you make of Ineos Grenadiers? They were quite animated. We even saw flashes of Egan Bernal, which was quite good to see. But like at the end of it, they come out empty-handed with no podium place. And obviously, Pidcock was talked about a lot as well, the Amstel Gold winner.
I think that Pidcock just got unlucky today. He had a badly timed... He got caught behind that crash, I think. No, he didn't. He had a mechanical... I think he had two mechanicals. He had a mechanical just after that crash, which put him into the Van der Poel group. And then I think he had another mechanical where yeah, Ben ended up behind it and had to just probably expend quite a lot of energy just trying to get his way back into a decent position where he was ultimately at like a nigh on 30 kilometers prior. So I think if it wasn't for all that, you might have seen Pidcock get a top five today. But I mean, maybe he could have gone with where Bardet is. Actually, he could have finished on the podium if he hadn't had to do all those moves. So we'll never know. You know, as I say, woulda, shoulda, coulda. And but you know, 10th place, he probably won't be that happy with that. But I think a lot of things went against him, so it's definitely not due to his lack of ability that he got his 10th place today.
Romain Bardet, we have to talk about him as well. Great result for him returning to the podium at Liège-Bastogne-Liège. I mean, I didn't see him getting on the podium this year today. And also with them having Fabio Jakobsen win in Tour of Turkey. I know this is not a Tour of Turkey breakdown, but just a great day for DSM, right? And maybe Romain Bardet has some good form he can carry in. I'm not even sure if he's doing the Giro right now. He certainly should be.
Yeah, I think he is doing the Giro. It's so it is exciting going into. He had a decent Tour of the Alps where I thought he was good. I don't think he was like outstanding, but I thought he was definitely good. And yeah, just really bookending that week of racing with a second place at a monument. Like you say, it's his second monument podium. And I think, yeah, it's just a really good, you know, it might be a result which people forget over the years, but it was a very good result where he, again, like Van der Poel, just played a very calculated race, took his opportunity, and then just got his head down and got himself a second place, very deserving. And yeah, France still with this elusive, you know, not getting Liège. I think it was like 45 years or something since their last one, so another year goes by, but yeah, I think, there was a point where that second group contained three Frenchmen. It had Cousinofoy, Grégoire, and Bardet. And I thought, oh my word, start playing La Marseillaise. It's going to be absolutely, there might be, you know, two French people on the podium.
We've talked a lot about group dynamics in these recap race analysis. I mean, that must have done your head in as well. The amount of group two dynamics that was going on in this race. Oh my goodness. It was just like, guys, work together.
It was, I know, it's so, from an outside perspective, I guess it's just so easy for us to say, everyone just, you know, there's 15 of you. If you all just rolled through and off, you'd catch Bardet and you'd all be in chance for second place. But then everyone's thinking, well, I don't have the fastest sprint, so I'm not going to work. And then one person does it, two people, etc., etc. And then you end up with nobody wanting to work. And Marcel van der Poel came back, and Marcel van der Poel got third place. You know, you could look back and say if that group did work together, they would have been fighting for the third place. Maybe even second place if they caught up to Bardet as well, which would have been a fairly realistic ambition if they did work, but they didn't. It's a long race. You want to be preserving every bit of energy you can. So although it was maybe frustrating for us to look at from an outside perspective, I understand that, yeah, it's probably very...
You understand. Uh-huh. Okay.
It's just easy for us to look at it.
They also have, like, radios, so we have to bear that in mind. They'll have, like, the S's telling them, don't work with him, don't work with him, yeah. Whatever.
Yeah, they'll be like, oh, he's fast. Yeah, don't work with him.
Yeah, exactly. So there's so many more components to this, but it's just frustrating as a cycling fan being like, guys, you're 15, there's one of him, go, go, go.
No, it is.
But I mean, one incident we should talk about coming to wrapping this up is the Bahrain Victorious team car helping Bahrain Victorious try and close the gap. I thought that was different.
I feel like it happened quite a bit today. It was a really chaotic point where Pidcock had attacked from the Van der Poel group to try and bridge up to the peloton. that gap being about a minute. So the cars had just gone through. But then by Pidcock attacking, the gap came down. So then the cars had to get pulled out. So there was just like 10 cars. And they were trying to weave their way through it. And because of that, you just end up with cars in front of riders. And like, yeah, the cars were allowed to be there because the gap was a minute. But yeah, it did end up being that riders managed to sit on the back of cars. I mean, I saw it with Bahrain. I think I saw an Alps in one. I saw Groupama just blatantly in front of theirs going up a climb as well. One of them, they did almost put one of their riders into a ditch, to be fair. So, but yeah, I don't really know what to make of it. Like, what can you do? You could say, you know, those cars just should have been pulled out. And it's like, yeah, but I think that, that was definitely
end of.
There should have been a couple of slaps on the wrists of things which didn't happen today, but they did.
But yeah, in terms of predictions, I think you did fairly well. Much Van Poel obviously didn't win.
Yeah. I mean, I went with the easy one instead of Pogacar, so that was just a pretty, that was low hanging fruit.
Yeah.
But I did get, I think I said that Pidcock was second, or Van Hills was second, and Pidcock was third. To be fair, Van Hills was fourth. My logic was kind of there. So if Bardet wasn't ahead, I might have got two on the podium now. So, oh well. I mean, what will be our next one? Our next prediction will be for the...
Giro,
and so I have to get my head... Well, that'll be an easy one as well. I wonder who's going to win that.
But yeah, anyways, with that, that's basically it for our Liège-Bastogne-Liège recap race analysis. Make sure to hit the like button, subscribe to the channel here if you're new. And this is also available on podcast form as well on Spotify. And check out Patrick's own channel, Audi Cycling. As always, thank you very much for watching. And of course, as always, we will see you around.